Good morning and welcome to the programme. Today, will the families of the victims of the Uvalde mass shooting take legal action against the gun manufacturers? Well, the lawyer who took a successful case in Sandy Hook tells us they also have a strong case. We'll have the latest from Dublin Airport. How are Ireland's bees, blue bottles and beetles coping with climate change? Aina Launa will be here to explain. Brian O'Connell has been finding out why boxing has become such an important tool in addiction treatment. The disgraced prince, the return of Harry and Meghan, and today the absent queen will dip a toe into the intrigue of the Platinum Jubilee celebrations across the water. And of course, we'll debate the big stories of the week in the Friday gathering. Text us this morning, 51551. Email todaycb@rte.ie or on Twitter, we are at Today with Claire. First this morning, four men were yesterday sentenced to jail for terms of up to 19 years for the rape of a 17-year-old girl in a car in the Midlands in 2016. A fifth man was sentenced for sexual assault. Judge Tara Burns said it was unthinkable that a young, vibrant woman on the cusp of adulthood could be treated in such an inhumane way, and that the men who were aged 17 to 19 at the time behaved like animals. In a moment, I'll speak to the former chair of the National Women's Council and adjunct professor at the School of Law at the University of Limerick, Ellen O'Malley Dunlop. But first, I'm joined on the line by journalist Peter Murta, who has been writing about the detail of this case in the Irish Times today. And just a warning before I chat to Peter that some listeners may find details of our interview distressing. Peter, good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
You go through the timeline of the events on this night, a normal night on the 26th of December, and a few drinks in the home of a school friend, followed then by a night at the pub. And this turned into a living nightmare for the young woman at the centre of this case. Will you take us back to that night and where it started?
Well, it all centres around Tullamore in Offaly. And as you say, it started on St. Stephen's night, December the 26th, 2016. And the piece that I write today is about the sort of the banality, if you like, as to how these events start. I don't think there's a parent or a young person in the country who won't recognise the evening as it unfolded, obviously up to a particular point. There are a bunch of young women. They're school pals. It's a celebratory time. It's a family time. It is that time of the year that we all know. And she goes out to her friend's house, and they're getting dressed. They're getting made up. You can as a parent, you can understand. You can guess the sort of conversation they're having. It's a girls' night out, and they have a couple of drinks in the house, and then they go out to a pub or two in the town, and there's a few more drinks, and they're bumping into friends, and it's all quite pally and jolly and really unremarkable and uneventful.
Yeah,
and you can imagine.
As you said at the beginning, it's the banality of it that we all recognise, having the leftover Christmas dinner, mum giving a lift over to a friend's house at 7:30, and then having the crack with the girls getting ready for the night out. At some point, this young woman's phone fell, didn't it, into the loo?
Yes, she's in one of the pubs, goes into the loo, puts her mobile phone onto the top of the cistern, and it slips off and goes into the bowl, and she fishes it out almost instantly. But it is damaged, and it doesn't really work properly for the rest of the night. She does manage to communicate later, I think borrowing somebody else's phone. But yes, she is now without a phone, and I suppose that's not a comfortable feeling to have.
Mm-hmm. So then onto the pub, into the nightclub.
Onto the pub,
The nightclub closes at 2:30, and then the young woman and a friend, they went to get some food and they met some friends there.
That's right. At this stage, there are people pouring out onto the streets. She has met other people. Other people have met her. Kind of the group that initially went into town for the evening has broken up, has become dispersed. And they're going to various fast food outlets. One person wants a burger, another person wants a spice bag, whatever. So they go to different food outlets. And then as the early hours wear on, I think people are getting tired, and there's questions about, well, will we go back to so-and-so's house for another drink or a chat or such and such a person's house? And eventually the young woman decides, no, she's going to go back to the original house that she went to early in the evening, where she was offered a bed for the night. and she goes to a taxi firm to try and get a taxi. But of course, the firm's crowded. Loads of other people are trying to get a taxi to get home. And and then she decides, OK, well, I'll walk. Sure, it's only a 10, 15 minutes or so. I'll walk back to the house.
And so she
sets off walking.
And that was about what time?
It was just coming up to 4 a.m.
So she decided then that she would walk home about 20 minutes. I mean, plenty of 17-year-olds have made that decision in the past. But she was spotted by a group of men in a car.
Yes, what she couldn't have known was that in the nightclub earlier, there were four people there, and four of those people were also out on the town. And when they left the nightclub, they teamed up with the fifth person who had a car, a blue VW Passat. And it was something of had some boy racer qualities to it. It had tinted windows and alloy wheel, and something was done to the suspension at the front. So the nose of the car was a little bit lower. So these five people were in the car, and they were cruising around the town in the early hours and coming up to 4 a.m. And at one point, it was noticed that they went 15 times past a particular location, the location of the nightclub. And they were leaning out the windows, and they were sort of jeering and shouting and, calling at various people. And so the young woman is walking home, and lo and behold, this car stops, opens the window, calls out her name, "Do you want to lift home?" And she says, as she said in her evidence, she, made one of the decisions she will regret for the rest of her life, in that she gets into that car.
Just on that, the car stopped and someone called her name from the car. Now, you can imagine yourself, you're walking home, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and someone you know calls out your name. You can understand how you would make that decision, can't you?
Yes, absolutely. And, she, in her evidence, she was chastising herself. She was beating herself up for that decision. But as the judge at the end of the trial said, I think correctly and with great kindness towards her, that she did nothing wrong. She did absolutely nothing wrong. She had no reason to believe that a young person like her out in a medium-sized town in Ireland should fear something like this. You know, this was what happened to her, was totally uncivilized, and it none of the blame attaches to her. So in getting into that car, she was doing something that to you and I, and I hope to our children, is actually quite natural to do. Your name is called out. You think, oh, God, I do want to get home. And here's this person, friendly person, going to give me a lift home. Fine, I'll hop in.
And that's when the nightmare began, because she squeezed into the back seat of that car. And it all started from there, really, Peter, didn't it?
Yes, it did. She sat in initially, and then they asked her to lie across three of them in the back seat, because, it's the early hours of the 27th now, beyond St. Stephen's Day, and there's a lot of guards around, and they might see us and want to stop a car with six people in it. So she lies across them, and then it starts, hands everywhere, and it gets worse, and it gets unspeakably worse thereafter.
And she asks them to stop, says, "What are you doing?" Starts getting upset, and of course it just gets worse from there, because instead of taking her to where she'd asked to go, they go elsewhere.
Yes, they do. They take her to a remote place, a disused harbour not far from Tullamore, not in the direction she wanted to go. She is raped multiple times there, and then they drive off, and a couple of them are dropped off at a housing estate, and they go to another car park, and she is raped and assaulted again. And it just goes on. And in her evidence, and what I was trying to do in the Irish Times today was tell her story. She, in her evidence, she described how, she was questioned that she didn't run away, she didn't scream out. And these are my words now, but she explained it as though she was paralyzed by what was happening. She did say at one stage it was like an out-of-body experience, what was happening to her. She just could not believe it. And she did keep telling them to stop, and they paid no attention to her. And in fact, they filmed what they were doing at one stage. Unfortunately, the guards were never able to find that film. But the judge did note that that was one of the particular aspects of their depravity, that not only did they attack this young woman in the way they did and violate her, but they actually filmed what they were doing.
Yeah, and I remember her during her evidence saying that she was aware that there was the light from the camera was shining at her at one point.
Yes. And she asked them to stop doing that.
She was eventually freed. What happened then?
She was freed and in an appallingly distressed state, as you can imagine. And she ran to a house where she knew there were some friends. She had actually borrowed the phone. I mean, this is actually one of the extraordinary things about it. There comes a point when these characters in the car start sort of behaving, quote, normally, unquote. And they lend her one of their phones to text a friend. And through that means, she finds a house where she knows there are friends and she can be safe. And so she runs in a distressed state to that house. And her friends there immediately are aware of the situation and immediately call the guards and get her help. And the guards act with commendable speed and take her to the specialist unit in Mullingar Hospital, where her parents are, where there's medical care. And she is, embraced by all the services that you would want to be there to help her. And the guards then separately start raiding the homes of the five people.
Mm-hmm. And those five people all handed lengthy sentences yesterday.
Yes, Marcos da Silva got 15 years, Eduardo Filho, 17 years, Ethan Nicolau, 7 years, Gabriel de Rocha, 20 years, and Conor Byrne, the only one to plead guilty, got 12 years. And I think the judge suspended a year of those sentences. So a total of 66 years, which is a pretty extraordinary number of years. And I think represents the court's feeling as to what went on.
And the young woman, of course, addressed the court in that 2,000-word-long victim impact statement that she made.
She did, yes. And it was very a very lengthy, very brave statement on her part. She talked about the impact on her, how she was a confident, outgoing young woman, how she wanted to see the world and travel.
Peter, I'm not one bit surprised, because I read your piece early this morning and I felt exactly the same. You know what got me? When she said, "I am," and she named herself in court, "who was raped and sexually assaulted. I'm 23 years old, a rape survivor who, if I could go back in time, would say to my 17-year-old self, don't get into that car. It will change your life immensely."
Yes.
Peter, I'm so grateful to you for doing that, because I know it wasn't an easy one to write or to talk about, but we appreciate it because it needed to be told. That's Peter Murta, investigative journalist. And as I said, Ellen O'Malley Dunlop is with us as well. Ellen, very difficult to hear the details of that. Just such a distressing and unthinkable case.
Oh, absolutely, Claire. And I read Peter's piece, and it's just harrowing. And he absolutely captures the awfulness and the depravity of what was visited upon that very, very brave, courageous young woman, you know, just at the cusp of coming into young adulthood. A child, like, according to the law, 17 years of age, she's still a child. I mean, it is just unbelievable what has happened to her. And the positive thing is that, you know, yesterday she got justice, and she it has given such hope to other victims. I mean, she very clearly is not going to be defined by that, which is really important. She is a survivor.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you would hope not, but I know that's a message that you want people to hear today, that you can pick up, you can recover from something like that. And you may at times imagine that you can't, but you can.
Of course, like in the middle of it, and as she rightly described, you know, it was like looking in on herself. That's what the psyche does. It removes. We get, you know, in these times of trauma, we remove ourselves in order to be able to manage what's going on. But there is help. 1-800-77-88-88 is the 24-hour helpline. There are people there 24/7. There you can call. come through this and you can get on with your life. And I think that is a really strong message. The other piece that I would like to emphasize is the fact that there was such a delay in getting to court. I mean, I think that was unacceptable. I mean, that crime was committed in 2016, and here we are 6 years later. That girl had to wait that length of time to get justice, and I think that is not acceptable. I think we do need more judges to be appointed to all the different courts. I know the Judicial Studies Training Committee now are doing fantastic work, and it was indicative. We saw that yesterday. The judge knew exactly what was going on. She was absolutely on top of everything that was going on in that case, in terms of obviously from the legal perspective, but also the emotional and what was happening to that girl. And she understood the complexity of what happens to a person when they are violated in the way this young girl was violated, how she blamed herself, but also had the courage and knew also that it wasn't her fault.
Ellen, thank you for joining us on the programme this morning. That's Ellen O'Malley Dunlop there, and the details of that case. I know it's very upsetting to hear it from the start to the finish, and if you've been affected by anything that you've heard, help is available. Just go to the RTE website, it's rte.ie, and then /helplines, and you'll find all the information there that you need.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.